listening.
Postulated four very important features
of the engram. Actually, one after the other later turned out to be true. But before we list these four features, I would like you to a little bit feel the scientific environment of the early 20th century. So you have to know that in this case, science psychiatry just started to evolve with Jung and his follower and Freud. So the idea that brain has something to do with our behavior just started to emerge, but it was not clearly spelled out. In case of neuroscience, it was still not clear whether we have neurons as separate entities, or we have a synthesis where basically every neuron is communicating with all the others. This is when in 1906 Cahal and Golgi received the Nobel Prize. And in case of evolutionary biology, there are still big competing theories, the Lamarckism versus the Darwinism. How many of you have heard about Lamarckism? No one. But probably, surely, Darwinism, yes. So Lamarck was a French scientist who lived before Darwin, and he was the first to propose that actually our features can be inherited from parents to daughters and sons. But his main idea was that you can acquire new features during your life, and this can get into the germline, and you will inherit it to your children. So it gives you the neck of a giraffe becomes longer and longer because all the time he wants to reach up and up, and that's why his neck got longer, and as a result, his kids would have longer necks. Of course, by now it's a quite silly idea, because now we know that Darwin was right, and the idea is that there is a random variation in neck lengths. And if the giraffe has longer neck, it reaches more leaves, and as a result, they will have more offspring. But interestingly enough, back in those days it was not clear, and you also have to know that just a couple of years ago, the inheritance of acquired features again become in the spotlight of science. And it's called epigenetics. And now apparently it's absolutely clear that the features you are exposed to during your life can affect your germline and can affect your offspring as well. It's both good and bad. So one of the examples is, say, the cannabis smoking. If a pregnant mother smokes cannabis, it's just not bad for her health and for the baby's health, but actually it transforms the genetics of the baby, and the baby will have a different life throughout its entire life because there will be changes in the germline. Anyway, so the whole thing I told you, because this guy was actually a Lamarckist, okay? And he very strongly wanted us to believe that if we acquire something, any knowledge, it will change the structure of the brain, and later on it will be inherited. And of course the first part of his thought is absolutely true and it's revolutionary. The second, as you see, is of course not. So his first postulate is, which is actually now quite trivial, but we have to say that it's more than 100 years old, that engram, so the memory trace, is a persistent alteration in the brain as a result of a specific event. What does it mean? So when you learn something, something physically changed in your brain, and a new structure will evolve, and this will carry the anger. The second postulate was that the content of the engram is specifically linked to the information perceived during the encoding, and it will actually predict what can be recalled later. Why is it important? Because in every case, in every memory, you are not able to record every tiny details of the memory, but you record the most salient part of the memory. So this is why the engram will only link to the information perceived, and all the others which were not perceived will be not stored in the engram. The third feature is that the major feature of engram is ekphory. You have to learn this very strange new word. Someone used this word ekphory to describe the ability of the engram to change behavior when reactivated. In other words, when you remember something and you remember that you have to go to this exam or to that route, actually the engram will change your behavior and you start doing the appropriate acts. And this feature of the engram is ekphory, that it has the ability to change your behavior. And the fourth very strange thing is that the engram is actually, most of the time, is in a dormant state, right? So once, of course, you learn something, but then life goes on, and this engram is seemingly doing nothing. Once, however, with the appropriate keys it is retrieved, it sort of wakes up from this dormant state and able to change your behavior. So these are, as you see, over 100 years old idea, and these are the actual words of Salmon. Engram is enduring, though primarily latent, meaning dormant, modification in the irritable substance produced by the stimulus. The irritable substance is, of course, the brain, which again back then was absolutely not trivial, since action potential was not known only after the Second World War. And consider concerning ekphory. Ekphory awakens the engram out of its latent state into one manifested activity. So it's able to change your activity. So, so much about the setup, but you have to remember these four items, and during the lecture, basically I will show one by one that he was absolutely right concerning these four postulates. So let's see how, before we get into details, in what organization levels we can talk about the engrams and the memory traces. The first and most trivial, of course, is the synaptic level. I have to ask at this point whether have you learned about long-term potentiation and the plasticity of synapses. Okay, so in 1973, Bliss and Lobo described the ability of synapses to change their strengths. And now we know that this ability of the synapses make learning possible. So basically in this case, if a synapse undergoes learning on pre- and postsynaptic, many proteins change, both at the pre- and postsynaptic levels. Of course, this is a synaptic vesicle, more vesicle can be released, and on the most postsynaptic side, more receptors will be expressed, so this presynaptic terminal can have larger effect, and this will represent the new learn event. These events will, for an enduring memory trace, induce nuclear changes and will induce the expression of new proteins. This is an absolutely necessary step for long-term memory. These include CREB protein, histone protein, immediate early genes. Are immediate early genes familiar to you? These are activity-dependent genes which become active in any neuron when it goes through some significant activity. We will see later it's important. So these nuclear events, of course, are fed back to the synapse, and many of the proteins synthesized here will get back to the very specific synapse which underwent changes. Not only the molecular composition of these synapses changes, but also the structure of the, of the dendritic spines where the contacts are made are known to change. They change their size, their shape, and you have to know that dendritic spines are highly active processes. They grow with time, and as a consequence, during learning, many of the synapses actually become stabilized, and they will represent the enduring memory trace. So when Sen was talking about a structural change in the brain, this is what we can understand now, that indeed new spines may grow and new spines may contain the engram. At the level of neurons, these changes will take place only, of course, in a subset of the neurons. So in any brain structure which learns something new, of course not all neurons learns, but a well-defined subset will contain a memory trace. And this is an important feature of this, because if too many neurons are involved in learning, then the memory capacity of the system is very low. So this is why in many memory systems, the code, the neuronal code, is extremely sparse, meaning that very few percent of the neurons are actually involved in recording any events. One of the primary examples is hippocampus, where the spontaneous firing rate of neurons are extremely low, and only very few neurons indicate any significant event. And finally, of course, very rarely a single brain structure encodes a memory trace. In most of the time, interconnected brain regions act together to link the memory trace. So these would be the different levels of organization where memory traces can be stored. What is the life cycle of the engram, and how can we understand it based on the principle of Sen? So, during encoding in any given neuronal population, a selected subpopulation will be active, and their interconnected network will change the synaptic strengths, and they will store the memory. At first, however, this is only a labile memory trace. And in order to become a persistent memory trace, it has to go through a process called consolidation. Consolidation allows the system to store the memory trace for a long time, but actually consolidation does not require new or repeated exposure to the original stimulus. So consolidation takes place via the spontaneous activity of the brain. And as the memory trace consolidates, of course, it gets into a dormant state, meaning that these neurons are not active together because they may be part of a different network as well. But the main thing is that as an interconnected network, as long as they are dormant, they are not active. Now, if you have a significant stimuli which is able to retrieve this memory trace, this neural network activates again, and the neural network will reactivate, and the memory trace becomes again an active state. And now comes a very interesting thing, because now you would think that it can spontaneously get back to reconsolidation and again to a normal state. But by now it becomes evident that if you remember something, then again the reconsolidation is an active process. So again you need new protein synthesis to store this memory. And actually this process can be used now to help with people who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Of course, what is post-traumatic stress disorder? You get absolutely threatening situation, and the problem is that it disturbs your everyday activity because you all the time remember this event. And the idea now that if you reactivate this stuff and you interfere with the reconsolidation, then actually you can have a hope that this disturbing memory traces can be at one day disrupted and will no longer reactivate all the time. So this is the life cycle of the engram, which again demonstrates that Sen was right. So let's see now in a concrete example how this looks like, and this is what is used most of the time in case of memory function, fear memory, since it's highly quantifiable and very easy to learn and read out. So what is the experiment? You put the mice into a small box where it receives a tiny food shock, which is still inconvenient for him, and he freezes. Next, of course, you put this animal back to his home cage, where it all the time lives, but since this is not a threatening surrounding, the level of freezing is actually quite low. Now, if you put back the same animal to the box where it received the food shock, even if you don't give any food shock, the freezing level will be very, very high, since the animal associated the food shock with context one. So this would mean the reactivation of the memory trace. So the sensory stimulus, in this case the context one, basically activates the memory that I had some bad experience here. Now what happens in the brain? Here you can see three structures which are known to mediate fear memory. One would be the prefrontal cortex, the six-layer structure, the other the hippocampus, and the amygdala. And as you can see, in all three structures, the red dots, the red neurons, are involved in coding this engram. During the storage, back in the home cage, of course, these are in a dormant state, so they are not active together. However, when you put back the animal to the original box, then the sensory stimulus will reactivate the system in all three brain regions, meaning that indeed the sensory stimulus is able to activate the memory address. So let's see now how we can follow, record, or identify a memory trace in a living animal. And of course, for this to do, you need to record the neuron activity, which of course Sandu could never even imagine. Again, I have to ask, have you heard about place cells already? Place cells, hippocampus, whatever. So place cells are neurons in the hippocampus which code a specific location in the environment, irrespective of in which direction I stand, in this particular spot, a certain number of hippocampus neurons fire, and this represents this place. And if I move on, then different place cells will fire. But aside from that, of course, place cells are the engram of the specific environment we are in. Since when you re-enter a room, the same place cells, so if I come back 2 weeks from now, exactly the same place cell will activate here than 2 weeks before. So place cells actually represent an engram. And as a consequence, if you record place cell activity during running on an elevated linear track, then the sequential activation of these neurons, so this would be 10 different place cells in the hippocampus. This is the start point, and this is the end point, and the y-axis you have the neuronal activity. As you can see, as the animal starts, this blue neurons increase their activity, then the other blue, red, yellow, ETS, ETS. So basically, this sequence of place cell activity basically represents the animal, this linear track, and the memory trace of this linear track. If I disrupt this anyhow, then the memory trace is gone and the animal will not remember that he's ever been on this track. Now the interesting thing, which is a little bit faded, that if you record exactly the same neurons during sleep, right? Right after the animal ran in this linear track, so in the first 24 hours, you will see a very interesting phenomenon. Basically, the neurons will fire in exactly the same order than during the awake state. Of course, the only difference is the animal is not running anywhere, he's curled up in his home cage. So what apparently is happening that the brain is recapitulating the events what happened during the day, and now it's absolutely clear that this recapitulation is absolutely necessary for consolidating this memory trace. There is one interesting difference, however. The animal, it took 5 seconds for the animal to run on this platform. However, during sleep, it took only 150 milliseconds to run this sequence. So basically, what happened is that during sleep, the brain condensed time in order to allow the neurons to fire closer together in time. Why is it necessary? If you heard about LTP, then you have to know that in order to achieve LTP, so changes in the synaptic strength, the pre- and postsynaptic neurons should fire in a very well-defined time window, which is actually very little, no more than 5-6 milliseconds, right? If they fire within this 5-6 milliseconds, then there will be increase in the synaptic tracts between the pre and postsynaptic neurons. If they fire further away, then just the contrary happens, the synapses will be weakened or depotentiated. So what happens here is that during sleep, basically the brain pushes together these neurons in order to allow them to fire closer to each other in time and to increase their ability to make enduring increase in their synaptic strengths. So in short, what happens here is that the labile memory trace become permanent memory trace, and this is the process of consolidation. And what I meant that consolidation doesn't require the exposure to the original context. This is what I meant, that while the spontaneous activity of the brain, the exactly the same order of events can take place in the brain. So basically, we can examine what we learned here in the framework of Sennett. Apparently, indeed, these engrams are persistent, because if I put back the animal 2 weeks later, exactly the same neurons will be active. And it will be linked to a special event. You can put wherever you want the animal. These animals will never fire in this order anywhere else in the Earth. So this is very, this order will be specific to this environment. It is of course linked to the perceived information, because if you put the animals anywhere else, different activity will take place. Of course it's able to change behavior. Here there is not much behavior, but we know that basically for spatial navigation we absolutely require these neurons to be active. And finally, indeed, we can detect that the engram gets into a dormant state, since this, what we call actually sleep replay, can be recorded only for 24 hours after the initial exposure to the environment. Later on it disappears, meaning that the memory trace should be there, but you cannot record it. We know that it's there because if you put back the animals 2 weeks later, the same order will happen, but you are not able to record this linear activity any longer. So, what other evidences are there that this sleep replay are actually is very important in memory consolidation? So these are the following. The first one I was already talking about, that after encoding this engram and the neural activity spontaneously reactivate during the sleep in the first 24 hours. The second is that the degree of reactivation is actually correlated with the degree of engram retention. Meaning that, of course, you can imagine that this reactivation can be more or less precise. Basically, this activity may completely mimic the awake activity, or maybe some neurons wobble and fire here and there. So the better the reactivated trace mimics the original one, the better the memory trace is. So this is another evidence that indeed the memory consolidation happens during sleep, and sleep is important. Now, of course, if we inhibit this reactivation during sleep, it will impair the memory trace, so no learning will take place. And finally, interestingly, if there is a sensory stimuli present during the learning, say a smell, and if you present this smell during sleep, the sensory stimuli is able to activate the memory trace of the later phase, meaning that indeed the even during the sleeping state, you can recall the neural assembly representing the memory trace by a sensory stimulus. Of course, this is nice and well with in case of mice, but how can we know that the same thing is going on in our brain? And of course, this is not an evident question because it's not easy to keep electrodes in the human brain. But under certain conditions, it's rightful and it's done. Specifically, in this case, epileptic patients received electrodes into their hippocampus because the neurosurgeons needed to know where is the focus of the epileptic seizure, and they want to remove only one of the hippocampus, which is responsible for the seizure generation. Otherwise, at a later stage of the lecture, you will see what happens if we remove both hippocampus. So anyway, these guys were asked whether they are ready to ready to promote science and undergo a very simple experiment where the formation and the recalling of memory trace and specific events can take place. And of course, all of them happily said yes. So what happened in this case that they were not exposed to various events because that would be too complex, but they were shown specific videos, short videos, and during these videos the neural activity was recorded, and of course the question was whether this is the temporal lobe structure, this projection hippocampus. Of course the question is, do you have any neuronal activity which is specific to one video, and or there is not such a thing. Almost all neuron fires through all your all videos, or all videos which have women in it, or all which has sports in it. So this is what they wanted to test. And next, of course, they could do what you can't do with the mice. They asked the people to talk about these videos, and they recorded the same neurons and asked whether the same neurons are active again.
So this is how the experiment goes on. Maybe I may move my microphone here in order for you to listen. Let's see. Okay. So what you will see soon, I turn on the...
Welcome to Hollywood! Everybody comes out with one guy three.
Do you hear?
So the neuronal activity is down. And as you see, the neurons are not responding. So most probably this neuronal activity is specifically linked to this very well-known cartoon, and as you can see, the whatever else you show, exciting women or cameras or whatever, the neuron is empty. And of course you can guess what is happening at the end. So this
the small beep are the firing activity of the neurons. So of course no titanic. So obviously this specific event is able to activate the neurons and only these events. So apparently these are encoding. Now let's see what happens when they record the it's distorted because of of course you can guess what is going to happen there. So the idea here is that Adivali is laughing. I don't know whether you could hear that what was first, the increase in neuronal activity or the pronunciation of those words. So maybe it was not clear enough. But actually the neurons started to fire first, and then approximately half a second later the patient pronounced symptoms. Meaning that exactly what you may expect, that the engram neurons are actually become active because the guy was asked that let's enumerate what type of videos you see. And as the engram activated, then it changed your behavior. Again, this is the actually postulate, and then you pronounce the word Simpson. So apparently, the case is indeed true that engrams are present in the human brain, and actually the same neurons which are encoding given episode is also taking part when you remember these things. So let's go on then, and let's examine a little bit the dormant state of the engram. Of course, the dormant state of the engram poses a very tricky question to the scientist, because how can we study the existence of the dormant engram? I mean, they are not active together. So how can we study them? And the answer is basically possible by novel molecular biological techniques, which allows us now to track these seemingly dormant cells and to able to record and change their activity. So the key idea is the following. Let's label these dormant cells while they are active, and if we are able to link a permanently expressed marker to them, later we can modify that activity. And the idea goes on like this. As I mentioned earlier, there are immediate early genes, basically in every neuron, which got activated if the neurons are involved in high activity. So the idea here is that let's allow the neurons to express any type of marker, but only those neurons which are active in a certain situation. And of course this marker can be simple fluorescent protein or blue proteins, but it can be channel of things as well. So we can achieve a funny situation where we can label a memory trace, and even later with the laser light, you can manipulate this memory trace and you can examine how the animal is behaving to this manipulation. So of course the main question is how can we do this, and the method is called TEC,
10 methods, and it means the following thing. You have to make a transgenic mice which contains a tetracycline response element. This is called TREE, which basically regulates the transcription of these mediatory genes. If the tetracycline response element TREE is not active, then there is no immediate gene expression. And the TREE to be active, you need another protein, and this is the TTA, the tetracycline transactivator protein. When this binds to this tetracycline element, then the immediate early gene transcription is possible. Now the funny thing is that if you add the antibiotic tetracyclines to the system, the TTA is not able to bind to the tetracycline element, thus there will be no immediate early gene transcription. So as long as the animal is receiving tetracycline, the immediate early genes will be inactive. When you withdraw the antibiotics and then you expose the animal to a certain situation, then the immediate early genes will become active. So basically, under baseline condition, you provide tetracycline in the drinking water, and there will be no immediate early gene transcription. Next, you remove this tetracycline from the water, and as a consequence, the immediate early genes will be active. Together with the marker, the main thing is that it will be active only in a given time window. And after the experiments, you give back again the tetracycline. So only those neurons will express immediate early genes which are active in the given learning situation. So finally, the result is that the specific markers will be expressed only in the cell population which was active during the learning situation. And before the break, I will show that how it works and how we can study dormant engrams with these methods. So the experiments are exactly the same. You put the animal into a box, slide food shop, home came, and if you put back, the animal shows freezing. In case of the what these cartoons show you, that the red neurons are the tagged neurons which are active neurons and express channel rhodopsin in this case. The pink one are the tagged neurons which are in the dormant phase. So what happens here that if you put the animal back to the original context and you inhibit the engram neurons, the animal will freeze much less, meaning that indeed if you inhibit the engram neurons, you will inhibit the behavior. So basically the animal forgot that he ever received the food shock here. Interestingly, if you put the animal to a normal environment, this would be context 2, where he never ever received any food shock, and he, under normal conditions, he never ever expresses any freezing. But in this novel context, if you activate the engram of the original context, the animal will believe that I am in a fearful situation and it starts to freeze a lot. So meaning that indeed I could alter the perception of the animal. In this case, I basically activated a different subset of neuron, and the animal believes that, oh, I am again in context 1, because the engrams of context 1 was activated and started to show elevated freezing. So in this case, basically with these experiments, we can demonstrate that engrams are indeed there in the brain. They can become dormant, but say in this case with laser light, we can activate them and they will change the behavior of the animals because it will say that he is in a new situation. And I think we can have something like 10 minutes break and then